shir is sponsored by Ephraim, Leonish was his father, Rabbi Yecheskel and Moshe Aaron HaKohen, and by Andrew Grill. How's he pronounce it? Grill?
Grill.
In honor of Ephraim Becker.
Okay,
so there's a fascinating measure at the beginning of the Parsha, Parsha Pekudei. So Moshe Rabbeinu gives us this list of exactly how much money came in, and then he tells you what was done with it. He gives you this, he gives an accounting. Basically, this is like your first, we have our first accounting list. You know, what came in and how it was spent. So the Medrash actually, the Medrash Tanchuma picks up on this, and the Medrash Rabbah, they both pick up on this. Why did Moshe Rabbeinu do this? It brings a pasuk in Mishlei. It says that the Isha Munois is going to be Hobli Yashir. It's referring to Moshe Rabbeinu. He was reliable. How's reliable? Whatever was brought in, he was very careful to give a calculation. People shouldn't think that anyway he had misappropriated anything and take anything for himself. And then from there, it flows into an interesting example, which when the time when the Beis Hamikdash was standing and people would contribute their money to the Beis Hamikdash, they would each person would give a half of a shekel, and they would put all of this in this large room, and as three times a year they would take it, go in with large containers and take out money and use that to buy for the purpose of purchasing the korbanos. So the halacha was that the kohen who would go into that room, the kohen would go in barefoot. They weren't wearing shoes because people shouldn't think they're hiding any money in the shoes. They shouldn't wear anything which has a hem, because people will think they're hiding money inside the hem. They couldn't be wearing their tefillin, because maybe people think that they're hiding money inside the tefillin. And that's pretty serious over here, right? All right. So the Medrash continues. You see that there's a responsibility of a person to make a perception, which is, people should not give any room for people to misunderstand what you're doing. The pasuk which they based it on is a pasuk in Parshas Matos that Moshe Rabbeinu tells the two and a half shvatim when they make the request that they're going to eventually ben Gadim and Reuven, Chatzeshev and Manasseh, they're going to be fighting, etc. You're going to fulfill your commitment to be Yisim the Kiyam Mi Hashem and Misa. You're going to be clean. So Pashataych means that you're going to fulfill your commitment, and now there's no complaints against you. But the Chazal understand it to mean that you should be Naki. People should not have any way to perceive what you're doing is improper. And that's the source for the concept what's known as Marasayin. So Moshe has interesting shuva. And Rashi grapples with we have a language in the Gemara of Chashad, and a language in the Gemara of Maris Ayin. Maris Ayin, how it appears to be something improper. And Chashad is people are going to possibly in some way consider the fact that what you're doing is wrong. There seem to be two ways of saying the same thing. So Rashi actually differentiates between the two, between Chashad and Maris Ayin. Since Chashad is Halacha D'Oraisa, a person cannot do things which people are going to misinterpret and misunderstand and be perceived as being something which is wrong, even though it's correct. Marasayan is something which Chazal came along and addressed this specific issue and said, this seems to be something which is improper, and we're going to make this usur. So that's the Rabbanan. The difference between the two is, the Mora says, once something is prohibited because of Marasayan, it's usur even when nobody can see you. Once they made the action usur, Drabonon, it remains also whether people are around or not. Chashad doesn't have that limitation. So, for example, I have the situation way back when, I'm talking about, I don't know how many years ago, 30 years ago, my wife was teaching a biology class, and she wanted to go purchase clams to dissect clams. So you're allowed to walk into the supermarket and buy clams. Well, people think you're buying clams to eat, right? So you have a Marasayan issue. So there's no Chazal whichever answered purchasing non-kosher food. There is the issue of chashad. So if I go to a place where there's no Jews and there's no chashad, it would be mutter. But it had something, an issue of marasayin, they asked that specific type of action, so that would be also even if nobody's around. Even the more language, even b'chadji chadorim. The more it gives some specific examples of marasayin. There's a famous question that the pre-chodesh raises, are we allowed to extrapolate from the cases which the more halacha gives, we're allowed to extrapolate to other cases. So the example which he's talking about is that there's a Gemara which talks about the issue of using dam dagim, blood from fish. Blood from fish is more than a drink. So there's always sort of drinking, consuming the blood from fish. Okay, so if you eat fish, you want to take, squeeze out a fish, put blood into a cup and drink it, you can't do. Because people don't, it looks like blood. They don't know that it's dam from fish anymore. It's only mutter if you have some type of a way to make it recognizable. Some of the scales of the fish are floating in the blood, that is mutter. Okay. So the Ramah comes along and extrapolates from this. If I want to take almond milk and have my almond milk together with meat, it's only mutter if there's some almonds for some people. Okay, depending what your accent is. If it's floating in the milk. So the Ramah extrapolated from that case. The Rashba extrapolated from the case to a case of milk of human milk. It does not have a less status of milk regards to basa b'chalav. So theoretically, if a person would take milk from a woman and want to cook meat, it's totally mutter. But there's a marasayin issue. The perception is, and they extrapolate out of this case of the case of the blood of the fish. So they're extrapolating. Comes the Prichadosh. Prichadosh says you can't do that. The marasayin, like Ramosha is saying, was specific instance which Chazal addressed specifically, and they said the roster, and that's it. We don't have anything else which is also. So that's a famous argument. Most person go along, they follow the lead of the Ramah and the Rashba, and they say, all right. Now, on the other hand, the concept of Hector means written into the prohibition was that if you find a way to make some type of indication that it's okay, that's mutter. And the Rebbeinu said, the great crazy place, he says that we expand that to everything. It also means that the assumption of halacha was that it gets to a point where it's no longer misperceived, right? That it would be mutter. So one of the famous questions is margarine. When margarine first came out, like people didn't know what margarine, and the margarine has been around since 1869. But I don't think, you know, the first X amount of years, people don't know. Non-dairy creamer, soy milk, these type of things. Originally, would have this. It got to the point where it's common. The most I recall that the KAJ would require when they would serve non-dairy creamer on the tables. I went to a class probably 40 years ago, which was under the KAJ after. You had to put some type of an indicator on the table that it was non-dairy creamer. It's a fleishig meal. It was part of. You had to put in the indicator. Nowadays, most our organizations do not require that. It's become so common that there's no need to indicate that.
So that would apply by like the imitation meats and imitation cheese.
So then you apply to the imitation meats, imitation cheeses. You want to eat the
meat, whatever it is.
Right. All of those. The more common it becomes, the less you need to make some type of a hecker that is. So those are some of the examples which Chazal gave. The Chazal also said it in the areas of mominus, which becomes a fascinating question. A person finds an aveda. So certain scenarios, the law is you find an aveda. That if the upkeep of the aveda, if I find an aveda, the law is that if I have to spend money for upkeep, I can charge the owner when I return it. I go back to the owner and say, here's your item back, but here's the cost. I found chickens, you know. I don't have to cover the cost of feeding the chickens. I have to maintain the chickens for you. So the Morris says, well, pretty soon the chickens are going to eat the value of the chicken, you know, if you keep them for too long. So the law is you're allowed to sell the chicken and keep the money. So I'm empowered, but I can't sell it to myself because we're afraid that I'm not going to give full value. I have to sell it to somebody else. If a person was given papers and they're starting to rot, you're allowed to sell them. They shouldn't go and get a loss. Okay, so that's some examples. One of the questions with the concept of the Marasayan is, I have non-Jewish money. I have a non-Jew put money by me, and he said that he asked me to lend it out. I'm not allowed to lend it out in ribbis to a Jew, because people don't know that it's coming from the non-Jew. They think it's my money. Right? Even though I'm just acting as his agent, there has to be some way. You have a Marasayan issue. If it's not done in a way which is obvious and clear that I'm lending the non-Jew's money, you have a problem with Marasayan. That leads us into a interesting thought process of the level of, you know, it's not just the Isser type of concepts, but the Chosh Mishpat issues, you shouldn't be perceived that you're cheating somebody, etc. When we deal in general with Chosh Mishpat, that moves us into an interesting question of the level of responsibility of care that we have to have to be perceived that we're not cheating somebody, etc. So there's a concept called Ganevus Das. Now, Ganevus Das deserves its own shear. It has tremendous amount of areas where it applies. I'm selling off an item because I have extra of them. So I can tell. I can say it's a clearance sale. I'm selling it for a discount because it's a clearance sale. But the problem is that the item is not moving. You know, it's not a clearance. It's not. I'm giving you a discounted sale for this of all the item. It's not moving, so it's a clearance sale. I can't call it a different sale according to some boyskin. I have to be very careful how I present it. I have to present it in a way which is totally correct and obvious. Ramosha has a famous question that they asked Ramosha about going to a non-kosher restaurant. To go into a non-kosher restaurant, do you have a Maror Sayin issue? So there's different ways of presenting the question. Is a question you want to sit down, just sit there. You want to sit there and drink something and maybe eat something which is halakhically acceptable. You want to bring in your own food. You want to go in and use the bathroom. What was the scenario when he's talking about the question? And you actually get different answers. Different Pesachim will give you different answers. What Rav Moshe meant in the tshuva. Did Rav Moshe refer? Rav Moshe says it's a problem. Rav Moshe says in the case of tsar, it's going to be mutter. It's an issur rabbanon. Chazal were matter this rabbanon because of the case of tsar. So two examples of tsar: a person is famished and he has no place to sit down to eat other than here. So that'd be mutter. You need to use the bathroom. You know, there's no other place to use the bathroom but here. You're traveling with the only place where there's a bathroom available is here. That would be a valid need. Did he mean to us or going in there in Dendril to use the bathroom? So, one of the famous, the interesting questions they have in Rambam that there's a machlokes Yilun Yerodeya. There's a machlokes between the Marshal and the Taz, the Ramah, about putting kosher food on non-kosher plates at the inns that they would stay in, these non-Jewish inns along the way when people were traveling. The question was, could you put something which is a Dover Korah, something which is sharp, on the plates or not? So, What are you doing eating in a non-kosher inn? Nobody seems to bother by that question. So apparently you're allowed to go to the non-kosher inn, the non-Jewish inn, and eat there. The only question was, can you put it on the tray for plates? Right? So the answer to that is not really correct, is because in those days, the inn wasn't just for eating. It was a place of lodging. It's the same thing as you're going to the hotel, which for the purpose of sleeping there, and your goal is to at the same time to there's a restaurant there. So meanwhile, you have your own food. You want to sit down and eat something. That was the scenario which he was talking about. So it was common people, but you have a restaurant which is only its only function is just to be a restaurant. So that's what some suggest Rav Moshe held was a proper going in general. A lot of poskim said that's not Rav Moshe just meant that his issue was going there to eat. So example of that which means if you go in to have a business meeting and you want to sit down there and have a business meeting, is that mutter to have them order you a kosher meal and join them? So that would be much more problematic. It would be much better that you shouldn't be eating with them. You take a drink, something which is clearly, right? I remember my person Cleveland gave this, discussed this issue to a group of businessmen, and they said, if we're doing business in New York, we'll take them to the kosher restaurants. If we're doing business in Omaha, Nebraska, it's very hard to take them to the kosher restaurant. And all business is done over food. So but the argument then being, that being said, that means that it was common enough that people would go in, they wouldn't necessarily always eat. You might just take a drink. The more common it comes that you wouldn't necessarily be eating, it's not a Maror Sayin to go in. And that seems to be, that would be a good argument. So going in there, but to sit down and actually eating there, that's not common that they're pulling out non-kosher wrapped dinner for you from the back. That would be much more questionable to sit down bringing your own. Most places don't let you bring your own food in, but they would order something beforehand. Probably that would still be a problem. The person's traveling, you stop at a rest stop, and there's this eating area where everybody sits down and buys their meals at the various different restaurants. You want to sit down and eat your sandwiches over there. That would be better. That's not uncommon for people to bring their own sandwiches and sit down over there. It's not like something. It's not a limited type of place like a restaurant. You can't bring an outside food type of a thing. So that probably would be better.
Question over here.
Yeah.
How does this differ from, say, some sort of non-Jewish event that you might be invited to where there's a dinner, but they order you a kosher meal? So, like, say you have a friend's wedding or something like that, and you go to the wedding and they get you a kosher meal.
So it might be a little bit better.
It's
than
not a restaurant, so it's not like a thing specifically.
So the caterers, it's not in a situation where it's a catered meal in a hall, they're bringing different types of food and they make special meals for the vegetarians and special meals for they accommodate a lot of people. It doesn't have the same level of problem as the restaurant, which, you're not walking in.
So there's something important about it being an institution that's for the sake of serving food.
Right, which is that seems to be the more of a problem.
Was there any issue with eating airplane food that's kosher?
No, because again, like, you know, they have their halal food and they have mm-hmm. their vegetarian food and they have their kosher food, and they, you know, each person's doing their own thing. So that's not, you know, wouldn't have the same type of a problem. Okay, just, you know, just taking this thought on the parsha that Moshe Rabbeinu gives this is a fascinating issue. You know, this whole concept of Marasai and Chashad. I mean, there's a mitzvah down the Chavzchus. So, you know, we're all worried about this because people are gonna not daven the Chavzchus. So Moshe Rabbeinu was worried about, you know, he says, I need to give the Jews an accounting of everything, where, how much money came in, how it was spent, the people will be able to see clearly that I didn't take any money. I mean, was Moshe Rabbeinu really worried about the fact that people are going to think that Moshe Rabbeinu stole money? I mean, you know, and if they did, like, you know, it's you know, there's something missing over here. Now, there is a Rashi earlier, there's a Chazal which brings in Parshas Kisisa that there was two opinions that when Moshe Rabbeinu would go out to the El Moyed, Eretz Yisrael, and watch at and look at him, the more says some, there's the Mechlokes and the Medrash means they were saying good things about him or saying bad things about him. So apparently Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't above people, you know, making comments about him. So that's a good lesson for people who are leaders. You have to live with that. It's part of life. But the idea that Moshe Rabbeinu felt a responsibility, and I can't shift excuse what I'm doing and saying, listen, I don't have a responsibility to do the right, you know, quote unquote, above and beyond, because you have a responsibility to take care of X over here being down the Chavzchus. I can't shift responsibility. So I said, listen, I have to do something which, even though it's correctly 100% pure, I have to do it above and beyond to make sure that you know that it's pure. You have a responsibility to daven the Chavzchus. I can't shift responsibility to you. I need to worry about my end. And I'll have a conversation with somebody and say, you know, yeah, but people should. You know, that phrase, people should, is a trait for phrase. People, you're right, people should do a lot of things, but that doesn't exonerate you in any way, shape, or form for doing what you have to do to facilitate people doing that. Or, you know, recognize the fact that people are not always going to do that, and you have to make sure that you're doing your end, that you can't shift the responsibility. People should take care of this in the shul. You know, people should take care of this in the shul. Who's they? You know, that's always the problem, is who's the they? So Moshe Rabbeinu goes to this extent of creating the keys, and the whole concept of the Marathon is created on that we have responsibility to make sure people shouldn't judge negatively. I have responsibility. You shouldn't judge negatively. So I'll do it by giving you a Musa Shmuz. No, that's not how I do it. I do it by making sure that I do the right, the above and beyond in such a way that there's no way to misinterpret it. Okay.